Cindy Morgan. And praise the King. It is 12 minutes past the hour. It's a Tuesday morning here along the Broken Road. And on Tuesdays, we're typically joined by Dr. Don Clark. And this being a typical Tuesday, so we have Don for you here. Don, a member of the board of Creation Moments and a really good friend at the station. He's the only biochemist we have on staff here. And we're proud to say that, Don. I just think you should know that.
Well, maybe we should say he's the ranking biochemist.
Well, that's true.
Which would also be true, but suggesting we got a whole team up.
Yeah. Well, you're number one. You're number one, Don.
I'm number one.
Yeah, you are.
You're the best biochemist we have. In a group of one.
That makes help you to stand out. Don, coming to us from Garden Valley, Texas, where he is, you're not really retired from biochemistry. I mean, we talk about it every week. You still have your dabble in it, but it's part of what you do, too, raising grapes for wine, huh?
Well, that's right. It's having biochemistry experience is quite helpful in the winery, mm-hmm. for sure, because there is a lot of chemistry that's involved in winemaking. And having a knowledge of some of the natural chemicals that are in wines helped... I think it helped us produce a gold-winning award.
That's right.
Wine
you won a gold medal the first year. That's pretty impressive, I'd say. Do you have a wine lab that has Bunsen burners and test tubes and lab coats for you that you go in and you do research on your wines? Is that how that works?
Well, I haven't gotten a lab coat yet, but I do have all kinds of lab equipment.
I think we know what to get Don for Christmas, David.
I've got distillation equipment, mm-hmm. For measuring alcohol. I've got of course hydrometers and refractometers.
Well, of course.
I've got all kinds of equipment equipment to do titrations, measure pH and mm-hmm. total acid and SO2 levels.
So they make it sound so technical. Mm. I buy a bottle of wine and I pop the cork and I taste it, and I go, and that's all I know about wine.
One of my cousins last weekend said, Dave, I'm into wine. And I says, really? He says, yeah, I've got a really nice box of it in the freezer, or in the refrigerator. I says, okay. Okay, yeah. All right.
David is a wine aficionado. You're not a vigneron. That's a person who makes wine, right?
Yep. Okay. Nope. I'm just a student.
Just a wine guy.
Just a student. I love to taste it. I had a really good Sauvignon Blanc over the weekend. We picked up some. Oh, I think there's a favorite dish that we've got. It's called linguine with clam sauce.
Oh yeah,
and it's mm-hmm. got just huge amount of butter and garlic, and mm-hmm. Can't go in the kitchen for about 2 days afterwards.
A little fresh parsley in there.
Oh yeah, it's really good. And yeah, I picked up it was like an $8 bottle. I mean, cupcake Sauvignon Blanc.
Oh, now we're talking.
And they're not
cupcake.
Even paying me money.
Cupcake, okay.
I'm giving them a pitch, but it's very, very, very positive, very fresh, very uplifting. And,
now, I have
nice,
a question
clean.
For you then. You enjoyed this bottle of cupcake Sauvignon mm-hmm. Blanc, and Sauvignon Blanc is my own favorite variety of wine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that the next time you go to the store and buy your next bottle of cupcake Sauvignon Blanc, it will taste the same?
As long as it's the same year, yeah.
Same year. Okay, mm-hmm. good.
Yeah, I'm not sure when they release their next vintage, and it's probably, I would say probably not for another 5-6 months.
Don, are you contending with that then in your wine business too, from year to year? I guess consistency would be important, huh?
Well, it would be important, but you really can't get that because we're going to harvest our Blanc du Bois, which won us a gold medal in 2013. Mm-hmm. We're going to harvest that this Saturday, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And already there are some differences, not necessarily differences in taste, but because we had all the rain initially this year, and now we don't have any rain.
Spring, yeah.
The Brix or the sugar content's a little bit higher this year than it was back in 2013.
Does that mean the wine will be less dry?
You can capitalize your wine to the whatever sugar content you want.
You can control that then. Okay.
Right, but unless, of course, you're in California, which they don't allow that to take place. Oh, but
I didn't know that. Huh.
Yeah, we're right now we're running about a good brick level higher than we were back in 2013, and it could go higher by the time
a brick
Saturday
level.
Rolls around.
Okay. Mm. Now, in California, is this related to the drought? Is it something to do with the usage of water, or is that just a law for wines in California that you can't alter the sugar content?
Yes, that is the law.
This is the law. Okay.
So whatever you get is what you got to work with.
Okay.
But, you know, they've been doing it so long, and they grow their grapes where they can control the amount of water on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can get very high bricks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 24 is not uncommon. And 26, is... also, not all that uncommon. So
I think in California is going to be a better year for raisins than for grapes, though. It's my guess.
So. Yeah, well, they're paying dearly for whatever water they're putting on the vines.
Boy,
you
got to
put some water on them.
Yeah. Well, listen, we've got an article in front of us here that comes from the Washington Post, which is usually an article. We consult scientific journals here and scientific reviews, and this is Washington Post. But it's talking about fish oil, and it's a topic that hits close to home here. I'll read the headlines. Fish oil pills, a $1.2 billion industry built so far on empty promises. Now, there's a video here for those of you who would like to follow up and maybe read this article for yourself. We will link to it in our podcast later today on the website. But for now, suffice it to say that the National Institute of Health has some explaining to do, because on one page on their website, it says that fish oil supplements are likely effective for heart disease. In another place, it says omega-3s, which is what fish oil is all about, have not been shown to protect against heart disease in supplement form. So the science is kind of going two ways on this. Don, is this unusual to find science on both sides of the argument?
Well, you're talking about food science, and and you're talking about a substance that is very well controlled and not very well, you got omega-3s, but there's all kinds of omega-3s, and natural omega-3s in fish. Is not the same substance that you wind up with in the gelatin capsules. They're actually capsules and not pills, so the title of the article is actually incorrect.
No. Okay. Well, yeah.
It's very difficult to do clinical research on a food substance and to be able to control all the parameters that you need to control that when you're doing clinical research. I've done clinical research for in a number of years when I was working for a biotechnology company. And even when you have a nice synthetic compound, it is extremely, or a biologic compound as we had, which was fairly well characterized, it's extremely difficult to do clinical trials. One of the reasons is because of the variability from patient to patient. You've got obviously age difference, but sex difference and health difference. Health makes a big difference in how people respond to certain types of.
Well, how do they do these studies then? I know the basic method, I guess, is to have two different groups, one who receives the supplement or the medication or whatever it is, and then a control group who maybe receives a placebo. But still, the size of these groups, it seems to be would be critical if you're trying to apply the results of your study to the population as a whole. And also, it might take a number of years to accomplish and do well.
Well, that's correct, because, as we know, anything that you... any food substance that you take, and vitamins are the same way, you don't get an instant result. So you got to take them for a number of months. Natural supplements, they suggest taking them for 90 days before you evaluate whether or not it's doing you any good.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're doing clinical trials for a long period of time. And in this case, one of the health benefits purported for omega-3s is less heart disease. That one in itself is a very complex problem. And so when you're talking about left heart disease, you have to talk about survival rates, or you have to talk about the number of heart attacks that this group had compared to that group. And in some of the studies, some of these large studies that they're doing, have shown some benefits of those people who have eaten fish, for example. But when they go to these supplements, sometimes they show a benefit, and sometimes they show not only the lack of benefit, but a detrimental benefit, which doesn't necessarily mean that taking these omega-3 supplements is causing you harm, but it does point to the complication in doing these clinical trials. Mm-hmm.
And so the research, you'd think, is ongoing. I understand, though, that a lot of these, for example, the required daily amount of vitamins and minerals and supplements and whatever else they apply in RDA to, lots of those were determined back in the early days of World War II, when the government was trying to formulate combat rations and have enough stuff in there, protein and fat and all the requirements to keep soldiers healthy in the field. But that we still see those amounts on our packages, our pills and our supplement packages today. You need so much of vitamin C, so much of vitamin D, but that's all old news. And I'm wondering if that's ever been updated. Do you have any clues about that?
Well, it needs to be updated, because mm-hmm. a lot of those studies were done to say, okay, what's the minimum amount of vitamins you need to prevent a disease? Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that this is the optimal amount. It just means that you're not going to get rickets if you have mm-hmm. a certain amount of vitamin C. So that's what that was based on. And a lot of the vitamins were based on, okay, when do you start seeing disease? So when you're talking about health, you want to know what's my optimum concentration of a particular vitamin and minerals in this case to not only prevent disease, but to keep me in optimal health, depending on my, activity, mm-hmm. exercise level and all this other stuff. Very difficult studies to do.
Now the next question is, who has the responsibility for doing that? Are there private labs that do that? And if so, are their research findings often skewed by economic considerations, their employer, whoever is providing the money for the research? How do those two factors influence the outcome?
Well, it depends on what product you're talking about. And what, if you're talking about vitamins, those studies, nutritional scientists, as far as I'm aware, have not, as I said, done the necessary studies to say what is the optimal level mm-hmm. of these vitamins in your system. I think the minimal dose on vitamin D, for example, is like 400 units, but the optimal dose is 20,000 units. So that's those two are far away from each other, especially for those who pretty much live in an office and don't get a lot of sun. Now, mm-hmm. if you get 20 minutes of sun, you've already gotten your 20,000 units of vitamin D during the day, assuming you've got some skin exposed. Mm-hmm. For office dwellers, if you will, you need to take some vitamin D supplements, and more on the lines of 5, 10, or 20,000 units, and not 400 units, which you see typically in your supplement bottle. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's difficult. Now, a lot of these products like fish oil the coenzyme Q,
I've been reading about that. I don't know what's authoritative on that, though. I don't know if it's good or bad, or what brand is right, or if it makes any difference.
Yeah, they're finding that the research on that was not all that substantial either. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. You get circumstantial type of evidence, and a lot of these supplements are based on circumstantial type of evidence. For example, the original fish oil story was... a couple of Danish scientists went to a very remote area in Greenland, northwest Greenland, and looked at the people group there, the Inuits, and found that their diet was high in whale and seal and fish. I mean, that's basically all they ate. And so these researchers back in the 1970s were expecting to find that, well, they have a lot of fat in their diet. And the thinking at that time was fat is bad for you and fat will give you a heart disease. What they found was just the opposite. It was there are very few heart attacks in this population group. And so they concluded that after thinking about it for a while, well, you know, fish, especially cold climate fish, like they would have in this area, and the whales and the seals, are high in omega-3. Well, that's kind of where the omega-3 story started, that, hey, if you take omega-3, it's going to be good for you and you can reduce heart attacks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, and that's where the economics climb in, because somebody will produce it and say, we got to sell this stuff. So bring me science that supports it.
Well, and this isn't, this is circumstantial evidence. It's not necessarily science.
Yeah, but see, it's the way you spin that circumstantial evidence.
Well, if you really, you know, wanted to be truthful about it, you would say, well, you have to eat whale, seal, and fish. Cold mm-hmm. water fish.
And that's all we know. That's all we know.
That's all we know. Mm-hmm. And maybe that will, you know, be good for your diet. Well, we know today that healthy fats, that is those with a double bond in them, for example, that haven't been cooked, are very good for you, as opposed to the fats that don't have a kink in their backbone, for example. Those are the ones, like lard, for example, that aren't necessarily quite so good for you. Although, you know, now you're seeing that coconut oil is being promoted as one of those healthy things to do and healthy things to eat.
Yeah, we go in phases, though. Things come and go and come and go, and you begin to doubt the science. And it seems to me like fish oil and snake oil have a lot in common.
well, there is, I think, and it's this is the problem, because we're all thinking, not, and it's opinion, really. But there is some, you know, there is some science behind it. The whole thing about oils and in fats and heart disease, for example, has not necessarily more to do with the types of oils that you eat, but of course the types of oils that you eat determines other physical properties of the oils once they get inside your body. And so omega-3s have a tendency of producing high-density lipoprotein. And so there is a correlation between heart disease and low-density lipoproteins, LDHs, and high-density lipoproteins. So when you go in for your blood test to see, you know, screening, let's say, for life insurance or whatever, or just general health checkup, and they look at your LDL and HDL levels, if your LDL levels are high and your HDL levels are low, they're saying, well, you know, Mr. Park, you really need to do something about this, and you really need to eat more healthy fats. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were from the South here, I would say that you're eating too much fried chicken and fried foods. But being from Minnesota, I don't know. Maybe you're eating, you know, too many steaks or whatever.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But anyway, the point being that, okay, there is some correlation to the fats that you're eating and the overall, you know, blood chemistry and how these fats get wind up being transported in your body.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can kind of see if you personally see a doctor and they do blood testing and whatever other kind of tests they do on your heart and they recommend this or that. But say to walk into a Target store or a Walmart, go down to their pharmaceutical department and peruse their list of supplements and their shelves of bottles and jars and all the advertising, there's not much you can conclude about any of that.
I mean, you could ask one of the guys in the red shirts.
But yeah.
But they're just giving you their opinion as well. I mean, and the problem is that this research is not solid, as I said. Let me give you an example. Here's a, of course, for years, if you had a heart condition, and if you had elevated cholesterol, you were given a cholesterol-lowering drug. And all the research, all the clinical research on that cholesterol-lowering drug, all that was done was to show that if you take this drug, your body produces less cholesterol. And, they thought that there was a correlation between cholesterol, because, again, they did these kind of anecdotal studies where they look at the blood chemistry of those with heart attacks or with heart disease and those without or had fewer, they found that, cholesterol is elevated in this group, so therefore cholesterol must be causing the heart disease or the heart attacks. And so they developed the cholesterol-lowering drug, and the important question, which no one asked, apparently the FDA didn't ask, was how's the survival rate of the group taking your drug, which is a much more difficult clinical study, and then you've got to follow these patients for years. Mm-hmm. So survival rates, and they eventually found out that lowering the cholesterol has absolutely no effect on heart patients. It has no beneficial effect, and probably has a detrimental effect, to these patients. Mm-hmm. And because the longer term study was never done to show that, what's the survival rate? I mean, tell me that the group that's taking your drug has a greater survival than the group with the same profile of mm-hmm. heart disease. They have a shorter lifespan.
Are you talking about statins, perchance?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So, if you're taking cholesterol lowering drugs, you might want to ask your doctor, is this really effective? Is this going to promote increase my lifespan or just lower my cholesterol?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he would say, well, we'll find out, won't we?
Yeah, we'll find out.
Yeah.
And how do you know? I mean, unless you do a whole population of individuals, you can't answer that question, because mm-hmm. one individual who happens to, beat the odds on survival is not going to answer that particular question.
And so I know that that statins are coming under close scrutiny these days. There are a lot of doctors who used to swear by them, and they're now swearing off them.
Yeah, so, right. Mm-hmm. And because all of these drugs have an effect on your body, which is you're blocking enzymes and you're blocking natural, your mm-hmm. body's natural ability to protect itself. And
we don't understand what other kind of damage might be caused by this. And that brings back a story I've mentioned whenever we talked about diet and science before. That's the finding in the 30s that iron... that we were deficient in iron, and they discovered how to put iron supplements in food, and so they put it in everything, from milk to cereal to everything. Everything was iron fortified for red blood and strong bones and all that. And then after 20 or 30 years of having these iron supplements out in the general population, I remember as a young child, Mom would call me into the kitchen every day, and she'd bring out a little brown bottle with a little pipette in there, and she'd squeeze a couple drops of iron supplement. And then it was kind of interesting tasting stuff. But it was years later they discovered, well, this is a primary cause of a prostate cancer in men. Too much iron.
Hmm.
And that's where marketing went wild on maybe what was a valid scientific finding, but all of a sudden we all had iron deficiency anemia nationally, and we got marketed to death, and everybody was buying iron supplements, and it brought on another spate of problems. Now,
too much iron in your system does cause a whole slew of.
Yeah, but how much is too much though? Does anybody know? Until the damage is done, So
exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, these in pointing out the cholesterol example, you know, my whole point in that is it's very difficult to do these studies, mm-hmm. and so it's very difficult to get definitive answers. And in food science, a lot of times the best that you can say is this might harm you or this might be beneficial. You know, unless obviously, you know, something like rickets, we know that you need mm-hmm. you need to eat.
Well, there's history there. There's 300 years of adverse reaction to lack of it, and so we know something about that.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's in the gross sense of the way. I mean, mm-hmm. okay, you need, but going to the question is, well, how much vitamin C do you really need? Now, Linus Pauling would say you can never get enough, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. as well as vitamin E. I mean, and then a lot of studies have been done on vitamin E, and there are so many variations of vitamin E. Which one do you want to study? And even with these fish oils, for example, it depends on how you manufacture them, will depend on their absorption. So you can take a fish oil from one company, and let's say you take a gram of that a day, and but it might not be bioavailable. It may not be absorbed because the natural fish oil is actually a triglyceride and not in the form that you get in these capsules, which are either fatty acids. They typically have to, in order to isolate out the fish oil, they would treat the fat, for example, in the fish with sodium hydroxide or caustic or lye, and then extract out the oil and then put it in a capsule. Well, if you do that, it's not very bioavailable.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these capsules out there are like that. Now, there are companies, one in Canada, for example, and others, that have gone back to esterifying or making the fatty acid, which was originally, the triglyceride is not charged. The fatty acid is charged, it's got a negative charge, so that's why it's not very bioavailable. And then they've esterified them, put like ethyl, made an ethyl ester or just treated with alcohol, for example, and esterified them. That's more bioavailable. It's about 5 times more bioavailable than the acid.
Hmm.
So when you go to do these studies, which product are you going to be using?
Yeah.
Is another question. So this is, you know, this food science is not undoable research. It's just, you know, takes a lot of money and a lot of patience.
And that money part complicates.
But the number of people that you're studying has to be in the thousands, mm-hmm. if not, you know, tens of thousands.
Yeah. Well, one telling paragraph in this article, I'll read it to you. While the persistent popularity of fish oil may reflect the human weakness for anything touted as a life-extending elixir, it also reflects that even among scientists, diet notions can persist even when stronger evidence emerges contradicting them. Scientists sometimes are reluctant to let go of ideas. Well, I think we've learned that a number of times here. David, do you ever remember getting cod liver oil? Did you have to take that as a youngster?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don, did
but
you?
But only when I was sick or something.
Really?
Yeah, if you were sick, you got your grandmother, your mother gave you cod liver oil.
Mm-hmm. Nasty stuff. Now, was that the same thing that we're talking about? Fish oil is fish oil is fish oil?
Well, it was high, it's high in omega-3s.
But
so
they didn't know about omega-3s back then, though.
No, they didn't. But they did know that, well, you know, this might help you get better quicker mm-hmm. if you take some of this. Yeah. You know, why not sprinkle it on salad and eat it that way?
It was pretty
fishy. We've done a better job of defishing, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
our fish oils.
Okay. Well, interesting article. And it's in the Washington Post. When we post our conversation with Dr. Don this morning as a podcast, there will be a link there for you. Otherwise, you can go to Washington Post and just search for fish oil. I'm sure you'll come up with the same article. Interesting how to sort through warnings and National Institute of Health and the DART study. There's lots of information here that's valuable to you, especially if you think you ought to be taking fish oil or if you've been teased by the notion or if you may be disgusted with the whole idea. You want to read this article.
I rely on probably the only set of research that I've ever heard of, and I don't think anybody else is able to take advantage of this. I take it because my wife says so.
No, oh, well, it's all then.
It's okay. Carol research.
Yeah.
And you know, and I've asked a number of times, why do I have to take this? And she said, because I'm telling you to.
Yeah, just like okay. just like mommy used to tell me.
Okie dokie.
Okay. Dr. Don Clark, member of the board of Creation Moments, and I want to recommend that you visit their website, creationmoments.com. You can link to them from ours if you're listening on Broken Road Radio this morning. And you'll discover a whole wealth of scientific information there. Not so much to do with diet, although there might be some of that in there. A lot of it has to do with young earth creationism. And I want to reiterate that this is science, and it's valid. And if you're in the middle of that argument, young earth, old earth, you'll find valuable, helpful information there to guide your thinking in that. And you owe it to yourself, I think, to pay a visit to creationmoments.com. And Don, thank you so much. Been a good discussion.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
I think I learned something.
It's another interesting morning.
So. Yes.
And I think I'll avoid all those supplements once again because I don't even know what's in there. And there's been a lot of scandal recently, too. You remember the research from recent Target stores and other places where people went in and took a look at what was in those jars, and there was nothing like what the label said was in there. So you've got to be a little suspicious of that industry, and finding a real authority on that is a major challenge. So just eat your food as close to nature as you can get it. I think that's the answer. Go squeeze a fish and see what comes out.
Yep. Get some cold water fish, but not the farm-raised type. Wild-caught salmon is by far much, much better for you.
I think so. I agree with that. Don, we'll see you next week.
Okay, sounds good.
Bye-bye.
See you, Don.
So long.